Welcome to the Go Procast, where we invite business doers who are changing lives by sharing their stories, their strategies and tactics, and who bravely talk about their failures that actually led to their biggest successes. Now it's time to Go Pro with Jeremy Torres. Today's guest is a former NFL athlete who built an eight-figure construction company after his NFL career. And then he lost it all in just 90 days because he became his own worst enemy. He hit complete rock bottom while working as a custodian in 2013. But today, Marquise is an executive coach and keynote speaker, sharing his amazing journey on the stage both nationally and internationally. Please give a warm Go Procast welcome to Marquise Ogden. Yo, yo, yo.
What's up, Jeremy?
I'm so happy to be here, man. I really am looking on my calendar. It's an electronic, but if I could have circled it, I would have because I'm so excited about your story.
Appreciate you having me on, man. Thanks a lot. I'm always good to talk with great people.
Well, that's the jury's still out on that one, but let's see what you think in 20 minutes here. We have a lot of people in common, some really good people. You know, Bob Kelly turned me on to you, and then Catherine Heaps, of course. Book Speak and Repeat. But one of somebody you probably know, if you don't, you need to know him. His name is Steve Needleberg. He's
I know him.
Great. So I start every show off with an ode to him by asking you to tell me something good.
Huh. So I tell you what, Steve is one of those guys that's just really great at connecting people. I've met his son. I know they have their show, like their LinkedIn live show. It's very well respected. It's very well renowned. And I think very highly of Steve. He's a great coach. He's a great business person, business leader. So I'm excited to know that you know him. That means I'm in good company in that regard.
Yeah, we're actually friends. We've become friends over the last 2 years. We use them, both Mark and Steve, to coach myself, my wife, and our four kids, believe it or not, during the shutdown. We were like, they're 18 to 28. They all have careers. They all can use their own kind of coaching. And Mark, it was amazing with them. And Steve and Mark helped Christy and I both with our, efforts, especially getting LinkedIn like a pro and connecting, building real relationships through LinkedIn, changed her business and reinvented mine because I just retired from 30 years of construction and started speaking and doing podcasts and writing books. So Steve showed me how to do that, and it's been so very effective.
Oh, yeah.
All roads lead to this, to these conversations. So I'd like to know a little bit about your background because it is so enamoring to me. First off, just a minute or two of your travels into the NFL, because that alone is a monumental feat. Mm-hmm. So what adversity did you face, and what are you most proud of during that whole phase of your life?
So honestly, for me, the best part about playing in the National Football League was actually getting to the National Football League, being drafted out of Howard University. I went to Howard University where my father played football for the Bison. Of course, I was there as a four-year starter at offensive line. I loved it. But when I went to Howard, the first thing I really wanted to do was be a doctor. And that didn't work out very well. So then I switched to business finance. And business finance did me very, very well. I worked at Merrill Lynch in downtown DC, 21st and K Street. I worked there as an intern. My boss, Al Coburn, was like the blue chip and blue stock advisor and manager of their division. I had a great time. I really enjoyed it. But I remember my first opportunity around like football and all that kind of good stuff is, it was interesting. I remember scouts coming to my practice, beginning of my senior year. I was like, wow, I guess what they're saying about me in these books is true. And so from there, worked hard my last year, was drafted to the National Football League by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I tell you what, some of the best years of my life.
And now Howard isn't a power school for drafting into the NFL, right? Like how many people from Howard get to the NFL percentage-wise? A very low percentage, right?
It's a very low percentage. I think we've had a total of about maybe 15 guys drafted. One of our big guys, Antoine Bethea, who was a draft pick by the Colts, played 17 years with a lot of teams, you know, the Colts, he played with the Cardinals, the 49ers. I mean, he had a great career, but very few of us are drafted in that regard. Yeah.
And you probably got the benefit of having a better education, I would guess, because the focus wasn't on getting drafted for the whole team. Is that a fair statement?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, for me, I was focused on, you know, doing my job, playing my position, but more importantly about school and, you know, and life beyond the game. Because, I mean, look, good. I mean, Tom Brady just retired after 22 years of an amazing career. He's the GOAT.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But now Tom has to figure out what is that next phase of life. Now, of course, he's very fortunate. I mean, he's already got a ton of money.
He's got bunch of money.
Bunch of money.
He can bunch of money.
And he can go like be like Tony Romo and get $20, $30 million a year to call the games.
Yeah.
And all that
Aikman.
Kind of stuff. But still.
I love Aikman listening to Aikman.
But again, like you said, Jeremy, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to figure out what's going to be your next move. And so for me, going into football in college, I was already thinking about life after football, but I got very blessed and very fortunate to continue my career into the National Football League after my time at Howard.
So as you're playing football, and the lessons you learn, because we're going to talk about a bit what happened with the becoming custodian and losing everything. And the way that this headline is, I think it's a little bit misleading. So I want to get in a little bit behind that because I think it's so important. So many people experience. I personally lost a business. I was homeless at 40. I was homeless at 17. And then I was homeless after I built this great business. Literally lost my home and everything at 40 years old. And had to start over and take a job at a call center, answering phones and selling. I'm not a salesperson, but I need health insurance. And I took the job just to kind of figure things out. And so how did the football prepare you for the later adversity that you had? What lessons did you bring with you from those days?
Well, one of the big things I learned, Jeremy, was the ability to have grit and perseverance through any situation, and also how to transition through change. I tell people change is external. It's things that usually and normally you can't do anything about. Like, for example, Brian Flores is suing the National Football League. Well, I know what he's trying to do, and I think he's making a statement, and I'm going to stand behind him because he's trying to do what I think is right. But he can't do anything about the fact now Denver's hired Nathaniel Hackett. Chicago's hired the D coordinator from the Colts.
Yeah.
He's no longer in Miami. So what Brian's trying to do is transition into a role of coaching somewhere else. But right now he's having a tough time.
Poison.
And he's wanting to make a statement. So I'm very hopeful that he'll transition into what he wants in life, either if he wants to get back into coaching, if he wants to, you know, get out of coaching, maybe go into consulting, or maybe go into college football. I don't know. But my point is that people can do nothing about change most of the time. But transition, or how you pivot and adapt to change, that is something that the individual has control over.
Yeah, they really react. It's just like with anyone you meet, with anyone you encounter, even strangers. You know, these adversities and these situations arise, but it's you've got control of the reaction. All right, that's the second step. The action is going to happen regardless, but your reaction is what we have control of. When did you realize that your dream of getting to the NFL and playing football was a business?
Huh. I realized it was a business after the first OTA as a rookie, knowing and seeing guys who were vets who were trying to come in to practice, you know, on sign with the team, like right before, you know, camp or right before our next mini camp. And a lot of guys who were older veterans were getting let go because of, you know, they were higher in the salary cap, but the team didn't want to take a hit on a older guy. They wanted cheaper, younger labor. So as a rookie coming into the National Football League at 22 years old, I saw very quickly it was a business. And it was, even though it was fun and that kind of good stuff, it's not just a game. It's a way of life without a doubt.
Yeah, you got to watch out for you, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if they don't watch out for you, they use you. You're a commodity, basically. I mean, some people learn that way too late. You know, why I'm a huge college fan, you know, because it's still a game, and it's not so different, but for the kids, their passion is so much higher. You know, so I'm more of a college fan than an NFL fan. Mm-hmm. When I became an adult and realized when I was a fan and realized it was a business, you know, growing up, and that it's, man, they don't really care about me. They care about my money, you know, mm-hmm. and the players, they lost their loyalty, and it wasn't the players. It's a business. That's when I realized, oh, it's not the player. It's a business. So, mm-hmm. but that's, you know, you can be more loyal to a school. I think it's easier. So let's transition, speaking of transitioning, into your movement into construction. What kind of construction was it, and how long did it take to kind of build it up to your eight-figure business?
So I was at earthwork, site work, grading, utility, seven erosion control contractor. So at the time, it was called Division II. So any type of, even we even did some small concrete. So I would say concrete, demolition, earthwork, grading, utilities, seven erosion control. That's what we did.
Nice.
And it took us about 3 years to get to eight figures because we were doing concrete and demo for the first year. Mm-hmm. Second year, we were doing mainly concrete demo, but my mentor, who was a big earthwork utility contractor, went out of business. Okay. And when that happened, a huge hole or a huge gap opened up for minority certified contractors in Baltimore City and the state of Maryland. Wow. Well, we stepped in and we ended up just killing the industry. We were just crushing it with all types of big clients, Turner Construction, Whiting Turner, Mitchell Phelps, Clark, Bizzuto. I mean, we were just crushing it. And we, by the end of the third year, the beginning of the fourth year, we had become an eight-figure business annually.
So that's revenue. And then how was the business run with profits? What did you end up with on a margin? Was it a 8%? Construction?
I mean, with earthwork, we're probably running about 25 to 30% profit margin
after expenses and everything.
I would say net probably about 25. I mean, yeah, because in earthwork, it's easy, especially if you could excavate the dirt and then take that dirt to another job site and dump that dirt.
Repurpose.
And you're getting paid to haul out and you're getting paid to import. It's the best of both worlds. And so site work is a really advantageous, very healthy, profitable business, especially if you own the equipment. We were about 25% net, and we didn't own the equipment. We were renting from Auburn Cat, Caterpillar, all those places, Bobcat. We didn't own any equipment.
So you don't have the maintenance expenses that are associated with all that. I mean, there's ups and downs of renting, and but that's a great margin profit. So how do you go from, eight figures with 20%, let's call it, conservative. Sure. What happens in 90 days? I want to go deeper, but I know we have a time constraint today.
No, it's a good question. And so basically what happened, Jeremy, is we were working for Turner Construction. We hit a snag. As a matter, I was just talking to a company we're speaking for in Austin in a few weeks about this. Okay. And I'll be a little bit more, because you're a construction guy, you understand. So we were on the job site working for Turner at the DHMH Health Laboratory. We were excavating dirt. Everything was fine. Concrete came in, middle, long, and all. Everything was fine. But somewhere around like that 3 month period, as they were setting the foundation, the water started to rise up from underneath the surface. We're like, what's going on here? So we ended up having to see, and then the waters kept rising everywhere. So basically there was a river underneath the job site, which nobody told us, which wasn't on the plans. And we bought this, this package for $4 million. And because the water was rising and it kept coming up, we had to come back and take care of all the extra issues. And because of that, the site just wouldn't dry. I mean, with the river, it took us 90 days. And so we spent about $3 million of our money, bank line, personal cash. I leveraged my home twice, credit cards, everything to get that site dry. Site finally dry after about 90 days. And when I went to get paid back by the developer and Turner, they denied the change order. On top of that issue, I was an ego man. I was all about money and fame and notoriety. And I ended up pushing away my best team members, my best employees. And as a result of that, Jeremy, between losing out my best people, that job where I was not paid for all that money that I put into the project, mm-hmm. Wow, I'm out of business.
So let's transition then from you got nothing. How long were you down for, and did you have a family, and how was this? I mean, how'd you keep it together?
Great question. So yes, I had my fiance, who's now my wife, and my stepdaughter, who was 8, lost everything, moved down to Raleigh, home was foreclosed on, both cars repossessed in the same day. I had absolutely nothing. I was working at Merrill Lynch in Durham as a financial planner in training, was there for 2 months, got fired, all my fault, got a job the next day to a construction company, worked there for 5 days, fired again. They shut down their sales part store. I'm out of a job. The only job I could get along with coaching kids football, I was a custodian making $8.25 an hour on the graveyard shift from 10 p.m. till 5 a.m. And I had my rock bottom moment of clarity, spoilt milk moment, with somebody's trash, rotten meat, nasty protruding garbage, got my body, my skin, and my clothes.
Yeah.
And that was my wake-up call. And I told myself, if I don't get out of this negative mindset, I'm going to be here for the rest of my life. And I came home, I wrote down my 3 biggest strengths. I computed, let's be a keynote speaker, start my keynote speaking business. And it took me 2.5 years to get my first paid speaking job. Finally got the job, and now today our brand's worked for 35 Fortune 500 companies, consulting, coaching. We're a 3-time best-selling author. We're a podcast co-host, and we just work hard to help as many people as we can with what they're trying to do in their life.
That's amazing stuff. I'm so proud. The key word that I keep hearing too is we. Mm-hmm. We That's are keynote speakers. All this stuff people assume are assigned to individuals, speaking, writing, and you get that mindset that no man does anything alone, whether he knows it or not. Nobody does anything alone that's worth anything and that has legs, So let's talk about your most recent book. Now, we have a very limited time today for it. I'm going to have you on my next show. My next show is going to be called The Risk Factor, and we're going to do a little more time. But let's look at your most recent book here. That's your website. If people want to get a hold of you, MarquiseOgden.com. And this book, The Success Cycle. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
The Success Cycle, Jeremy, it talks about 3 major facets that you need to build success. Ambition, which is creating your blueprint to succeed. Drive, being inspired over motivated. And hard work, focus on yourself and not the competition, then hit the repeat button. Mm. If you have ambition, drive, and hard work in your life, Jeremy, I feel, and this in general, you will live a very fruitful life. Our team really works hard to ingratiate the success cycle or things like accountability, responsibility into our keynotes, because if you're not taking responsibility or you're not taking accountability for what you're doing in your life, then I feel you're not gonna maximize opportunity.
For sure. And so does this book tell people what to do, because we don't have time to get into maybe take one of the three. Let's just break down one of the three. And does this book kind of walk you through how to repeat?
Yeah. So let's take ambition. We talked about creating a blueprint, creating goals, creating your map of where you are to where you want to be. There's tons of exercises in each chapter of the ambition, the drive, the hard work portions. We're all about action steps. We're all about consistency. We're all about people getting to understand that where they're at in their life journey, we can get them to that next spot, but they have to map it out. So ambition is huge, because if you go through life with no ambition or no purpose, you're going to live a very uneventful, unfulfilled life.
Yeah, and I always said that ambition is not innate. Usually, it's not innate. You don't born with ambition. It's an environmental thing. You get brought up depending on what you see in an environment. Where ambition and drive are developed is by examining your whys, drilling down over and over, 4, 5, 6 times deep, and often, not every once and that's it. It's yearly, monthly, whatever. Because once your whys are very clear, you develop drive, which is another word for ambition. And with drive, that's the David Goggins stuff right there. Nothing stops you.
Correct.
I'm surprised that building's still standing of the garbage that got on you.
Well, you know what, though, Jeremy? We want that building to stand, because we have a business partner. We took some photos, and one of the photos is a reenactment photo from the actual dump, the actual site. And, you know, again, like I was talking to the client earlier, I did not educate my client on how we were going to do business with them. I should have told them anything happens with this job site, anything happens with this ground or this earth becoming flooded or rising up, you all are going to be responsible to pay us the extra work. Because I didn't educate them and I did not let them know this, they took full advantage of me. And you know what? Nobody's fault but my own. So, yeah,
it goes back to the team, the NFL team. They're going to take advantage of you. You're a commodity. Contractors, when you're a subcontractor, I personally, my business writes contracts for subcontractors and for employees, for subs. So I write them upwards to the company and downwards to cover both. And I got a call yesterday from one of my clients that said that we have a meeting in the morning and there's like 4 board members and they're mad at me. And I just copied the PO section called resolutions, and it says you need to be notified of any issue. You have 5 days to resolve it. They have 3 days to look at it, and then if they don't, it's approved, and you got to get paid by May 1st. And so this morning he went there and he just put it down, and they was like, oh yeah, we know about that. But right there, it was already in writing. They signed it, you know, and we created that for them. And what they'll do is they'll try to tell you, yeah, but the spirit of the contract, you know, that's what that says. But the spirit is you knew better, and they'll still try to blame you. There's still every, so get it in writing, do it up front. Very expensive lessons. We both learn them. Thank God we're here to talk about them, and even maybe with a smile, because did it make you stronger?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you help more people now?
And I'm able to help our clients not end up like me. And
that's so right. That's authenticity.
That's the real difference, is that clients are going to not make the same mistakes that I made, which is exactly what coaching, speaking, consulting is really all about.
Well, let's get to the where can people find you? We got the book and MarcusOgden.com and LinkedIn, your two go-to.
Okay. Yep, so they can go to our website, MarcusOgden.com. They can send us an email at Marcus@MarcusOgden.com or Marcus_Ogden@Yahoo.com and get in touch with us, Jeremy. You know, we love to connect with people, love to chat with people. We're all about, you know, talking, communication, to see if we can add any value to what you have going on with your mission.
Yep. And who's your, in the last 2 minutes we have, your ideal client? Where's your sweet spot?
You know, it's corporations, you know, that really want to elevate the people that work for them. And it's also business owners who want to get coached and how to rise to the next level. And then just anybody who actually is trying to just elevate overall, either business development wise, professional development wise, and also people that want to be speakers. I mean, people who are trying to really monetize. I mean, like I said, we've worked for 35 Fortune 500 brands as a speaker, you know, and they could choose whomever they want.
Yeah.
But obviously something that we have and that we bring to the table is different than others. And that's what our competitive edge is. We pull in accountability, we pull in authenticity, and we pull in action steps combined with the story that gives our audiences what they're looking for. So that's what we're all about.
Well, I appreciate you being here today. If you hang out for me 1 second, I want to give you a proper goodbye. I'm going to say goodbye to the folks here. I want to thank everyone for watching or listening to or participating in the GoProcast. People like Marcus is on here to share their stories like I have shared mine. And you guys have always kind of reached back. And you've all been through the same thing, but you don't have the platform. This gives you the platform. Everyone can get 1% better every day. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on the GoProcast.